AI is not an experiment, it's a strategy. We are building the tools and the platforms for systems that want an ability to manage the entire AI lifecycle.
Welcome to the Business of AI in Healthcare podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Kaiser. Our mission is to discuss practical insights and share knowledge on how to navigate the transformative technology of AI. It's important to understand how AI can be used safely and ethically while revolutionizing patient care, streamlining operations, and enhancing medical research. Today, we venture into the deeper end of the AI pool and try to learn more about democratizing the complexity of AI governance. The company is Ferrum, and the CEO and co-founder is Pelu Tran. Ferrum provides a single system to deploy, manage, and monitor clinical AI. Welcome to the Business of AI in Healthcare, Pelu.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
We're going to cover a tremendous amount of information in our discussion today. And thinking about how to deploy, manage, and monitor clinical AI, that might just be up there with the category of attaining world peace. So before we get into the details of your approach at Ferrum, I want our audience to know a little bit more about you and your background. I find it really fascinating and probably more common than unusual. So why don't you share with us a little bit about your background, Pelu?
Yeah, I came into healthcare from a pretty young age. I was an engineer at Stanford. I ended up going through medical school there. And I was all ready and set to become some sort of surgeon or interventional radiologist when I had the unfortunate privilege of working at our county hospital here in the Bay Area while they were transitioning from paper charts to EHR. And I saw the catastrophe that occurred. I had mentors retire early. I had residents I was working with quit to go into consulting. And I realized that the opportunity and promise of technology in healthcare was all too often met with the unfortunate reality of its reduction to practice. And so most technology that's been introduced has just as much, if not more, harm that it brings to healthcare as it brings benefits. And I think there are plenty of students from Stanford Med who go into venture or consulting or pharma or med device, but there really aren't that many that go into trying to fix the digital health space. That became a personal passion of mine, trying to apply and develop human-centric technologies that actually make doctors and patients' lives better, rather than continuing to more efficiently propagate a broken system. My first company was tackling the problem of documentation, physician burnout, the fact that they're spending more time on a computer with a back turned to the patient than they are with the actual patient. And we built that up over the span of 6-7 years, thousands of employees, and ultimately brought it public before ultimately finding a home within a company called Camure. So that was my first company. About 6 years into building that, I once again had a personal experience with healthcare, where I had an uncle of mine pass away from a lung cancer that was missed by his doctors. Now, at this time, I had been heavily involved in the Bay Area digital health scene, and I personally knew the CEOs of multiple companies that were building AI for lung cancer and could have found his cancer for pennies if they had just been used. And when I sat down with some of these local health systems here in the Bay Area, sat down with some of these founders who were building these AI tools and tried to figure out why it was so hard for these AI tools to be used by the doctors and patients that need them, we realized that the challenges to AI adoption and the reasons why patients aren't getting access to these tools are multifold. And until we solve this last mile problem for AI adoption, the barrier to improving patient care is not going to be reimbursement. It's not going to be better drugs or better health insurance plans. It's going to be the inability to innovate within healthcare. And so that's what we set out to solve at Ferrum.
I got to tell you, I can relate to a lot of what you're talking about. I spent several years at the university, and our students that came were physician leaders. They came from across the country, and they shared with us a lot of the things that you just described. The whole healthcare system is a kludge. It's a kludgeocracy. It's just snapping stuff into place, trying this on. It's not a very well-organized system.
And then you add the complexity of AI and all the things it might be able to do. You'd like to find some sense of order that might be able to be applied. So let's start, if you don't mind, let's start with these clinical AI models. And how do they intersect with the FDA? The FDA is an important area, I assume. So where do these AI models fit in there?
That's a great question. And if you look at where AI is gaining traction and momentum in healthcare today, companies like Abridge and Ambience and Nebula that are building these scribing solutions, companies that are gaining rapid success in the coding and billing space, companies that are building for care coordination, you realize that AI is being used and aggressively adopted in healthcare in almost everything but actual patient care. And the reason for that is what you talked about, which is FDA and regulatory clearances. I think justifiably and understandably, the bar for an AI tool to be used in a clinical setting is much, much higher than it is to be used to deal with prior authorizations or to communicate with scheduling with patients. So you've seen a lot of the successes of AI and a lot of the things that providers have adopted is stuff that's really administrative. It's operational, it's productivity driven. But what that means is you're not seeing the actual fundamental practice of healthcare improve. We're still making decisions, we're still making diagnoses, we're still deciding on drugs and interventions and is a cancer there. Every actual decision that's being made, by and large, is still not benefiting from healthcare. Every decision that's being made is still not benefiting from AI. I think that's something that has continued to be a challenge where somehow the FDA is both a primary blocker to innovation because it appropriately defends conservatism. And then also it's not really doing a good job at ensuring that the tools that are approved by FDA are actually safe and effective. There's a great study around this where researchers looked at applications that were being used in the real world.
Yeah.
And they compared the performance of those applications to what they had submitted for FDA clearance. And they found that over 80% of those applications that were being used in the real world underperformed their FDA clearance by a significant amount. So somehow we are delaying innovation because we want to be safe. And no one argues with that needing to be the case. But our safeguards are not effective because even the algorithms that we deem to be safe, when they're actually being used in the diverse world of actual American healthcare, they're underperforming time and time again.
So there's a lot of AI models out there the FDA's approved, right?
Over 1,000, yeah.
Over 1,000, and most of those are what, for radiology, or are they in other areas as well?
Well, so 70% of them are probably radiology. I think 90%+ are some sort of imaging. That can include pathology, cardiology, dermatology, ophthalmology. There are all sorts of different areas where imaging is involved. But
for the benefit of our audience here, I understand there's three different categories. These are cleared clinical models and they're not approved or authorized. Cleared has a different meaning than being approved and being authorized, right?
It does. I think by and large, it isn't a huge difference when it comes to medical imaging. Approved is for the high-risk medical devices that are new to market. Clear just means that you are launching something that's kind of low to moderate risk. AI, of course, generally viewed as low to moderate risk. But on the other hand, these are tools that aren't being used on one or two patients. They're low to moderate risk, but they're being used on entire populations.
Yeah.
So the impact and the risk and the amount of potential harm or benefit that an AI model can have on a population, even if on an individual patient is viewed as low to moderate risk, on a population, it's immense because you're talking about fundamentally changing the diagnostic curve of a breast cancer population or a lung cancer population by the use of these tools.
So does the FDA treat these AI models just like they do medical devices and drugs? I would think that would be a favorable thing to do.
They do. The challenge with that and the reason why that has not been as effective as we ideally would want is because these AI tools are not physical devices. If you have a drug and it operates on a certain chemical pathway, by and large, you're going to have it operating in a certain way. If you have an AI model that's trained on, call it lung nodules, but it's just trained on GE scanners or it's just trained on a certain population of patients, a certain demographic, or a certain slice thickness of CT scan. Any one of those variables, and there are hundreds more beyond what I just mentioned, any one of those variables will profoundly affect how that AI model performs. When it comes to drug devices, yeah, there are always these examples of a device that's built for the male population not being appropriately sized for the female population. But when it comes to AI, even very small differences in data set, training data set, or the population that's being deployed on can lead to very profound differences in model performance. And that's what FDA clearance isn't good at helping hospitals catch.
Well, I would think that getting the FDA clearance in this case might be like a rubber crutch. I'm just sitting here thinking, if there's 1,000 different models out there, aren't these things being just scooped up and used every day? Isn't there a land rush to go get these things and put them into place? Is that not the case, if these things are widely adopted and widely used by everybody?
Yeah, what I can say is, if a company can't even pass their FDA clearance, then they definitely don't belong on the market. So I think FDA clearance is a necessary minimum bar. However, when 80% of the AI models that are FDA cleared underperform when they're deployed into production in the real world, it becomes a fact of it's not sufficient. Right? It's necessary, but not sufficient to have an FDA clearance. The onus still falls on the health system to, even for their FDA cleared solutions, make sure those solutions perform appropriately on their population. And that's both initially, they need to make sure that they're choosing the right vendor, the vendors they're choosing are appropriate for their demographics. But then in an ongoing manner, they need to make sure that they're continuously deploying and monitoring the tools they're using, because models drift, populations drift. As they buy new scanners or as new patients enter the system, the AI models that are using are going to start varying in performance. And even beyond that, AI is moving so fast. There's no other category of technology where the market leader changes every quarter. Yes. But in AI, we know that to be the case, right? Is it OpenAI? Is it Anthropic? Is it Google? We cannot be kingmakers here, and we cannot believe that picking one AI vendor for a certain use case and having that same AI vendor for the 10-year healthcare technology procurement cycle that we're used to is going to be the right solution, because that vendor you chose a year from now is probably no longer going to be state of the art. So all of this points towards there being a need for health systems to have much more of a systems thinking around their AI models that they're deploying, much more visibility into the tools they're using, and much lower cost to turn on new solutions and to swap out existing solutions than they have today.
Okay, let's shift this conversation a little bit to the direction of, we understand now that the FDA has these models that get approved, and they may not be as robustly approved as you want them to be because of the dynamics of this fast-changing AI world. If you're a healthcare system, I would think these healthcare systems would be bringing these models in left and right, day after day, new models coming in. What makes it difficult? What would you do if you are a healthcare system, a hospital system, and you want to start to deploy these models? How expensive is this, and how much time does it take? And how do you trust it? How do you know it's going to work? And how do you know that the people that created it are going to be behind it and support it? To me, that would be a big roadblock for them. I'd rather probably use some other type of AI on the front end for productivity improvement. How much does this cost? Is this a bad venture to go down?
It costs the average health system somewhere between $300,000 and $700,000 of internal costs to turn on any new vendor. And that's because healthcare systems are well known to have extremely long evaluation and buying cycles. They've got security, compliance, audit, review committees, clinical committees. They've got processes that they have in place to make sure that the solutions they're using are safe and effective. So when you are talking about $500,000 cost for each new model you are implementing, and you're talking about hundreds of models that your health system wants to be deploying, it becomes unbearable very quickly. Yeah. So that is the unfortunate reality of AI adoption today. That's, by the way, not even including the risk that these extremely data-hungry models pose to the average health system. We're talking about models that are running on entire populations of patients. They're aggregating those patient records and using them for training in ways that hospitals oftentimes aren't aware of. And so the reality is that if you're a health system, you're really going to struggle to adopt these clinical AI tools at scale without investing in infrastructure. Like most health systems that we talk to that have started to realize a need for a platform approach, they've deployed 2, 3, 4 solutions from some of the big players around stroke or around pulmonary embolism or brain bleeds. And they've said, these are great tools. Like, we really like these tools, but we're getting all these requests for all these other models, right? My doctors are seeing their peers using these cool AI tools and they say, I want some too. And the issue is there's no one vendor that delivers all these tools. There are some vendors that deliver a few of them, but you're talking about having to onboard dozens of vendors. And that's a multi-million dollar exercise for the average health system without having an investment in some sort of converged, rationalized AI ecosystem.
So you've identified just a whole string of problems here. This is not, like I said early on, this is like trying to establish world peace. There's so many parameters. There's so many moving pieces here. There's so many complexities and these problems. Where does Ferrum fit in? What are you doing to identify and make this clinical AI ecosystem work better? How do you start with this?
Yeah, I think it starts with understanding who we work with and who we don't. And as a business, we work with health systems that want to maintain their innovation momentum when it comes to AI. Systems that realize, hey, I've deployed 1 or 2 applications, but it's the next 10, 50, 100 applications that I'm going to be using that are going to transform my health system. AI is not an experiment, it's a strategy. And so we really focus on organizations that are invested in wholesale AI transformation. And those are organizations that have a systems approach, right? They're thinking about AI along its entire life cycle. They're thinking about AI and how it's going to transform their business. And so they're able to take and invest in more of a systems thinking where they're not looking at individual solutions, but they're looking at governance processes. They're looking at AI governance committees. They're thinking about not only how do I deploy a solution, but how do I manage its end of life? And how do I manage its replacement? And how do I manage its observability? How do I build my own models? So we are building the tools and the platforms for systems that want an ability to manage the entire AI lifecycle for the organization. And so that involves giving them tools to onboard and manage the wide array of AI models they're working with in a standardized way. We give them standardized infrastructure they can run within their environment to run these AI models. So you're familiar with GPUs and how critical they are to running AI at scale. We provide that GPU infrastructure running within the hospital's environment to run all these different models. And as you mentioned before, we give them the observability layer that they need to make sure those models are safe and effective for their patients. So
end-to-end AI cycles, what you're talking about then.
Exactly. And I think the response I would have to what you said earlier about, hey, like this is like trying to boil the ocean, right? This is a bunch of things to a bunch of different people. I guess my point in response to that is we just spent 20 years rationalizing and consolidating applications in healthcare. Like app rationalization has been the lingua franca for healthcare IT and hospital CIOs for the past decade. The consolidation onto Epic, the rationalization of their application ecosystem, that's been what they've been doing for the past decade. And all we're saying is, listen, like, you probably should be doing the same thing with your AI tools as well. Even though they are a new type of technology, you shouldn't be using 5 different scribing tools or 3 different patient communication AI models. You should probably have a registry of what AI tools you're using. You should know how they're performing. And you should make sure that you're deploying them on unified, consolidated infrastructure, so you're not spending massive amounts for individual AI tools to be run, not at scale.
Yeah. So this sounds like a C-suite. This sounds like a C-suite engagement. You're going to have to get above the noise. You're going to have to get into the highest level of management to look at something like this to get a systemized approach. It's kind of like the whole digitization that took place over the last 20 years where we went from paper to digital techniques. Someone finally came in to the C-suite and said, hey, we're doing it all wrong here. We need to find a better way of doing this that's got reliability and mitigate the risk. And are you calling on the top executives? Are they looking for a return on investment for something like this? Or do they just say, we have to have it?
Yeah. I occasionally get feedback that this is an unpopular viewpoint. So let me preface this with saying AI has incredible ROI for healthcare. It is the only way we are going to bend the cost curve. We're faced with massive staffing shortages. The quality of care that we deliver to society does not reflect the amount that we invest as American citizens. The value that AI will have to healthcare is indescribable. In a broken healthcare system where quality does not lead to financial outcomes, I think that many of the most effective and most impactful transformations have not had strong ROI. Like the EHR, I would challenge you to actually find like an at scale proof point that the EHR really has driven ROI aside from coding and billing optimization.
Yeah, that's for what it was made for. Was it made for the doctors? Yeah. That's for sure.
And guess what? Are hospitals getting paid any more post EHR than they were? I don't believe that logic. The PACS system for imaging archives. Like, I would challenge you to show like a really rock solid ROI for those. So I think all of the major platforms that are being deployed and being used in healthcare, ROI is not what it's about. They had basically became the gold standard of care. You were viewed as not delivering an acceptable level of care if you didn't use them, and so people adopted them. I think this is the same thing with AI. Like, there are many solutions where, guess what? There might not be a super strong ROI to a hospital to catch lung cancer early. In fact, it's probably a negative ROI in many cases. Because if you catch a lung cancer at stage one, local resection, no chemotherapy, the patient's out, you spend maybe $70,000 for that patient. If you take care of it at stage three or stage four, it's metastasized, you're making $300,000, $400,000 for the patient. So it's actually not a positive ROI. It's positive ROI for society, but it's the wrong model. And the benefit today with ROI around AI is no one's thinking about AI from an ROI perspective. They're told, hey, the board has played around with ChatGPT, and they're telling me this AI thing is a big thing. And CIO, I need you to figure out how to make AI a thing for our organization. Like, AI is a strategic priority for the organization, much more than it is something that they're trying to make sure that each additional AI tool I deploy is going to have a positive ROI. I think that we've generally, for the most part, gotten past that crutch of saying, yeah, we'll adopt AI, but we want to make sure every single tool that we deploy is going to have a positive ROI. Like, it's like, no, we're past that point. Like, the board is saying to figure out how we're going to be an AI-driven health system, because everyone is telling us that's going to be what's expected of us. And if we aren't, we're going to be left behind.
Okay, so let me assume here that with Ferrum, we've got a method now with the health systems where we can help organize them in a way to be efficient, to deal with security, to deal with risk, and really optimize their approach of using these models. Let's flip it to the other side. The people that are creating these AI models, how do you work with them? How do you plug them into this system that's working great for the healthcare? How do you make sure that they understand what you have and how they can collaborate with you to make the whole ecosystem run really frictionless? What do you do for them?
I mentioned this $500,000 price point for a health system to be able to turn on the new vendor.
Right.
The average AI vendor is making maybe $100,000 per year at their typical customer. And so you want to know why these AI vendors are struggling to sell their lung cancer tools to doctors that want it, patients that want it, systems that can use it. It's not because they're too expensive. It's not because there's not the demand for them. It's because it costs 5 to 10 times as much in internal friction for a hospital to buy their tool as they're trying to charge the hospital. So as long as that's the case, these AI vendors that are developing these solutions, they don't have a shot, because the ROI that they have to provide, it's not 2x or 3x the $100,000 they're trying to charge. It's 2 or 3x the total cost to implement them,
which is that $500,000, $600,000 cost.
The economics and the costs for AI adoption are fundamentally misaligned with what the vendors want or the hospitals want. We're dealing with a system that has the vast majority of costs having nothing to do with model development or vendor procurement. They just have to do with these 12 to 15 month sales cycles that these vendors have. So if you go to a vendor and say, hey, listen, like instead of requiring you to support this legacy infrastructure, requiring you to maintain a 24/7 HL7 fire feed into some hospital's data center, requiring you to have sales reps pounding down the doors of these hospitals and trying to outcompete the other 50 AI vendors that are selling the hospital at the same time. Right. What if we just gave you a way that can allow you to turn on your model and a hospital, have it fully managed by the existing provider, have a hospital be able to turn your system on wherever they want, and eliminate all of that friction for you? It is actually not just better for the hospital. It's actually a profound improvement for the vendor as well. The vendors spend much less money distributing via platforms than they do trying to sell direct.
It's almost like the whole cloud environment that we saw evolve over the last 10 years. Why invest in all this support and infrastructure when you can really democratize it and make it simpler to access and take advantage of, not only for the AI vendors, but also for the healthcare systems?
The analogy I use here is telling a healthcare AI developer that they need to sell their product into the existing healthcare infrastructure is like telling Airbnb or Snapchat that they need to sell and build an iPhone. Like they're not in the business of building this fundamental compute and application level infrastructure. They're in the business of building really good applications for consumers or patients. And they don't want to be building an iPhone or building a server or handling HL7 integrations or dealing with HIPAA or GDPR. Like they just want to be building really good AI tools, and they're going to be much better at that than we are, the same way we're going to be much better at building infrastructure than they are.
So if I'm a health system and I'm looking at all these different models that are out there, a lot of them radiology, but there's more and more showing up, and I'm sitting there trying to figure out, I call it infotoxology. There's so much information, it poisons you. You can't make those decisions. I call up a consultant and say, what do you got? Help me figure this out. How do I go about, is there a way that we can sit there and start to evaluate and trust a supermarket, if you will, of different solutions that I can feel comfortable with and trust and know what's going to work? Or am I going to take a risk every time I look at a new model? Obviously, I want to know if it's going to work. I'm going to talk to other people. How do I validate that selection process is the right way of choosing these models that are going to work for me?
It's actually incredibly straightforward, and it's incredibly popular. Because the answer is, there is no way to know if a model is going to be safe and effective on your patients, except to test it on your patients. Everyone talks about, we need to make sure that the models are trained and validated on populations that are similar to ours. And we need these nutrition labels, and we need these all these different sort of like FDA 2.0 certification processes for these AI models. But the reality is, I could have a model that is trained on exactly the same patient population as yours is. And if my CT scanner operates with a 0.1 millimeter slice difference, the model completely fails on your population. Or it could be the same slice thickness, but you know what? Like, it's a Philips scanner instead of GE scanner. Or it's an EHR that is storing data in a slightly different way with two decimal points instead of one decimal point for my labs. Like, any one of those things I described to you could lead to complete failures of an AI model on a population. So the only way to know that a tool is going to work is to be able to test it on your population. And it's what we call the ABCs of AI trust. The A is the algorithm output. What did the AI say? The B is the baseline characteristics of the population. So the demographics, the scanner types, the slice thicknesses, et cetera. And the C is the clinical ground truth, like what actually happened to the patient. And you need to have all three of those for your population to be able to know if a tool is going to work. Now,
You can have that be manually done if you're a Mayo Clinic or a Hopkins or a Cleveland, and you've got residents and fellows and researchers that can do that. Or you need some sort of automated system. Obviously, Ferrum Health builds one. There are others that have other similar solutions, but you need some way to test and monitor an AI model on your population to know, does it agree with your doctors and your diagnoses at scale, and to be able to see it slice and dice across your different demographics to make sure that it's not just safe for your average patient, but it's safe for all of your different demographics in your population. That's the only way. It's unpopular because it's hard to do without significant investment in a data science team or without partnership in companies like Ferrum.
So Paley, the Coalition for Health in AI, CHAI, I love the name CHAI. What are your thoughts on that? I've talked to a number of people and they say that it's really trying to foster collaboration across the whole healthcare sector, getting the industry, government, academia, patient communities, all those things. Do you guys interact with that? Is that an important part of education?
Yep. We very much believe that organizations like CHAI are going to be critical. And so the challenge, of course, is that standard setting bodies are held up to the lowest common denominator, and they are very much like trying to bring everybody up to a certain level. And it's necessary. It is a critical role to play. But the average hospital really is in the extremely nascent stages. They're just trying to figure out, hey, like, what does even setting up a registry of my internal AI tools look like? Like, how do I just do basic housekeeping for AI? They're not starting to think about the long-term effects and impacts of an AI ecosystem at scale. So again, I think we are working with systems that are ready to make that next step of wide-scale, multi-dozens of AI models being deployed rapidly across the enterprise. Folks that really want to be operating at the next level. That's not everybody.
It's most impressive, the leading healthcare systems that you're working with, going to your website and looking at that at ferrumhealth.com. It's just amazing how successful you've been in trying to get this alignment into place. So congratulations to that. Closing question here. Obviously, like you said, we're early on in this whole process. How do you see it? I've been reading the book most recently, The Coming Wave. What a great story. And they said, you don't call it AI anymore when it works. Okay. We just say, hey, this thing works great. But how do you see the next 5 years in your particular space? What would be the ultimate environment that you'd be able to portray? Your thoughts on that, Paley?
I think that health systems, doctors, and patients should be able to deploy AI just as easily as you or I download applications on our iPhone. Like, there should not be a 12-month sales cycle for a single new AI. There needs to be an ability for doctors to adopt AI for their patients as rapidly as technology companies are building it. Because guess what? The pace of AI innovation is only accelerating. Like, we all see this in our day-to-day lives, ChatGPT. And so the faster AI evolves and accelerates, the larger the gap is between what should be the gold standard of care and what actually is happening. And so already today, if we as a society were able to deploy all the AI tools, it will be able to use AI at the capacity and at the level that it is currently able to operate at. We would have no more missed lung cancers, breast cancers, aortic aneurysms. We will basically have solved all medical error today. Like, that is a solved problem for healthcare. Like, we can make every diagnosis. We can check every diagnosis. We can prevent all of these care gaps and medical errors today. Like, we have the digital data. The technology is already there. And so why is the third leading cause of death globally still medical errors? And it's like saying you had a cure for cancer. Because of logistics, like, we don't really feel like rolling it out, or because we're being careful, that's the level of impact that AI already has today. So I think that this is the single most important advancement to quality of care and to long-term outcomes that we have today. And I wish more people were thinking about it that way, because it's something that each one of us would wish we had for our loved ones, ourselves, and our day-to-day care journeys. And it's fundamentally out of step with how AI is being used everywhere else in our lives.
I wish I could live long enough to see you at my age someday and the changes that you're making to happen. I'm just so overwhelmed, so impressed with what you're doing. Ferrum certainly has a big load to carry, and they're doing a wonderful job on that. So I can't thank you enough, Peilu, CEO and co-founder of Ferrum, for being with us today on the Business of AI and Healthcare. Thank you.
Again, thanks for having me. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks for listening today. If you have any questions or want to hear from a specific guest, contact us at gopi.com. That's G-O-P-I, gopi.com. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes.